fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Fantasy Writers Tour Shed. I'm your host, Richie Billing, and today I'm delighted to be joined by the brilliant Joanna Penn. Joanna, thank you very much for joining me. It's a real honour to have you here. How are you doing today?
Oh, thanks so much for having me. And yeah, always happy to talk about business for authors.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's a difficult subject, I think, for a lot of writers. Writing is hard enough, and then to have to get your head around email marketing, social media, all this new stuff that's happening with like direct sales. I think it's for some people, I feel like it's probably more overwhelming than ever.
Yeah, well, I think this is actually one of my little soapboxes at the moment, is I think it's become too complicated and people are overcomplicating it because, I mean, obviously listeners to your show, listeners to my show, we are learners. We love to learn things and we think, oh, okay, I'll try this and I'll try that. But actually, it can be very, very simple if you take your business back to basics. And that is, I mean, obviously you need a product, but one of the, and that's the thing authors get obsessed with because we are artists, we like to write the book. But the main thing, and I think one of the mindset shifts for business, is you have to think about the person who's reading it. You have to think about the reader, you have to think about the customer. And we often, we write books and then we try and sell them. That's what we do, most of us. Whereas if you're actually thinking about, okay, am I creating something that people will pay for? And then even if you do, like let's take the standard indie author sort of model, putting an ebook on Amazon, as it has been for many years now, then people don't get a chance to pay you that much money. And as you said, how do people find you? But instead of trying to do everything, I'm kind of trying to encourage people to just think more simply. Yes, product, yes, customer, and then yes, marketing. But you don't have to do everything. You have to choose. You have to pick what actually makes a difference. And overarching all of this is, what kind of life do you want? What kind of business do you want to run? And for many authors, for like most people, most authors do not do this as a business or as a job. They have a job that pays the bills. And then being an author, being a writer is a wonderful hobby or something that might pay for a holiday, which again is amazing, but it doesn't have to be the be all and end all. So I think it's really important for people to sort of stop. I won't say stop listening because we want people to listen, but almost like stop and say, okay, does this fit into how I want to run things? Does this suit my personality? Does this suit the way my book is? So personality wise, for example, you and I are audio only right now. I don't do TikTok. I rarely do video. It's just not me. And so I've just said no to that. And it makes it so much easier when you can say no to shiny objects and just focus down. So as you said, it has become complicated, but it doesn't have to be. So that's my first tip for people, is really just narrow down what is entirely necessary for what you want to achieve.
Yeah, it's fantastic advice. I think if you do that, like you say, you've only got so much time and you can't become an expert in everything. And in the marketing job that we do, I mean, I do SEO, search engine optimization, and there's so many like niches within that, and there's I can't be a master of all. You've got to go to the experts in each sort of field. And it's a bit like writing and marketing and business, isn't it? Like if you've got like a business that's making money, you're not going to do your own accounts, are you, at the end of the year?
No, in fact, one of the first people I hired was a bookkeeper. And so I've had a bookkeeper since really very near the beginning, and an accountant, and the things that, as you say, are very necessary. And the other, I think, thing to consider for people is, you mentioned social media, for example, but what's interesting right now is, yes, people who are using social media for kind of direct sales are doing very well with it, but a lot of people are moving off social media completely and just going, do you know what? Not, it's just not worth the time, and I'm not enjoying it. So some people are changing their mind around what they're doing, and I think that's important too. As you say, you can't do everything, and in a world of increasing choices, and there are so many choices now for authors. I mean, when I started self-publishing in 2007, it was the year the Kindle launched and the iPhone launched. So before that, there wasn't, we didn't have really digital audio. We didn't have ebooks with PDFs, and audio were sort of still on tape decks and downloadable MP3 files as opposed to any kind of streaming. And so back then, we didn't have much choice. Even authors like us outside the USA couldn't even publish on Kindle. So I published first on Smashwords back then because you couldn't get onto the Kindle in any other way. And then over the years, it's just expanded and expanded. And now we can do everything. You know, we can. My last release was sort of gorgeous sprayed edges and foiling and just amazing stuff. And we can do everything now, which gives us wonderful choice, but also the tyranny of choice. So yeah, you really have to decide on how you want to, what you want to learn, and how you want to spend your time. And I guess the other thing on that is you can expand over time, so, but start simply and then move on from there.
I suppose it comes down to what you said before about understanding who you're writing for. And I suppose this is the main thing with any kind of business, is you've got to understand your customer, their needs and wants, and cater to that as best as you can. And it's very much the same with writing. So, like, what do you think it's like for writers? I mean, the process of getting into your reader's head, or trying to define who your target audience is. How have you found that experience personally?
Well, I think it's different for fiction and non-fiction. And I mean, you have the fantasy writer's toolshed is this, isn't it? But you've also got a handbook, I think, that you
Yes, that's
wrote
right, yeah.
that goes along with this. And that is just a nice and easy thing. So non-fiction is great. It's extremely easy to target.
I find that
It's
as
like,
well. Yeah, I completely
you know.
agree.
Yeah, and you've got this podcast. So same as me with the Creative Pen podcast. I have nonfiction books for authors, and you know, so for example, how to write a novel. Either you want that book or you don't want that book. It's kind of obvious. So for nonfiction, it is sort of answering questions, dealing with problems, that kind of thing. Fiction, obviously, this is the Fantasy Writers podcast, and it is much harder with fiction because there's so many variables. So for example, epic fantasy, which I think you write some of, people who read epic fantasy, they're so set in what they like around the tropes and the characters, and you know, this has to be this. I know this because my husband reads epic fantasy. So, and when there's something that just doesn't quite fit, it's not real anymore. You know, it's not a real epic fantasy. So fiction readers can be pretty niche that way. So you definitely need to know the tropes of your niche, and then of course you can break these rules. But if you want to keep selling to that sub, you know, that sub niche, you do need to really think about tropes and what the reader loves about those tropes, which hopefully are what you love about the tropes as well. What I would say with fiction is, I am a discovery writer. I don't write to market, and I decided with my fiction to really write in a more intuitive way. I don't stay in a niche. I have crime books, I have action adventure thrillers, I have horror, I have some fantasy, I have short stories, I have all kinds of things. And there is a vibe, you know, there's my author voice, but I write all over the shop for fiction. But for non-fiction, I am very clear. You know, I've even written a memoir about pilgrimage. Again, I didn't have an audience for that. It's just a case of sometimes you need to write what you love. But if we're coming back to business, I think what you've done similarly, which is you could focus on your marketing on your fantasy writer's handbook, and in the meantime, write all the different types of fantasy that you enjoy. And having a look at your Amazon profile, you've written quite different subgenres, I think, as well. So essentially, if you're going to write across different subgenres, you're splitting your focus into different customer groups, which is fine. But if you want to make money, the people who are making the most money in fiction are deeply serving one niche, going really deep and serving that niche with the not the same book, but certainly multiple books in the same world, multiple books that feel similar because they're the same genre. So you really just have to decide that what kind of business do you want to run, and then what kind of books are you going to write, and try and serve the customer while also respecting your own artistic sensibilities.
Yeah, fantastic. Very well put as well. And you pointed that out. The biggest issue that I have as well is that for the last few years especially, I've just been writing what I enjoy without really having much sort of conscious thought on markets and stuff. And I have you do especially in fantasy, you see really successful writers really hammering a specific subgenre, and that's if like you say, if they hit all the tropes and they write like really good stories, which a lot of them do, then they'd find a lot of great success. And
Yeah,
that
well,
is
think about
definitely
it.
part of my mindset shift as well, is now this year especially, I'm focusing specifically on a subgenre and sort of mining that as much as possible.
Yeah, and I think you had Sarah and Jamie on, I think, talking about series. But yeah, so series is really good creatively, can be really good. But also think about the money side. So how much money can a customer spend with you? So if you've got, and I have a trilogy, my Matt Walker fantasy trilogy is my kind of closest to the sort of fantasy you often talk about. And I have three books in that Matt Walker world. And it's a trilogy, and the people who like them love them. And then they're like, where's more books in this
Yeah.
world? So the most money that that kind of reader can spend with me is maybe $10 if they get the ebooks, or $30, $50 if they get the paperbacks or hardbacks or the audiobooks. Like, they can't spend any more money with me because I only
Yeah.
have those three books in that one world. Whereas my Arcane thriller series, which is kind of Dan Brown, Indiana Jones, I'm going to write book 14 this year. And
Nice.
that yeah, and that book, that series, people can spend a lot more money with me. I also do Kickstarter campaigns where, they can get special editions and all of that kind of thing. And so with a long and the, and what is brilliant on the Kickstarter, and also having the backlist, is you can say you can buy the whole backlist. So if you've discovered this series right now, you can buy the whole backlist, even the audiobook bundle and everything, for a really good bundle deal. And for me, it's a lot more profit. For them, it's like a massive deep dive into this world. So I know it's hard, especially if you're a multi-passionate creative like you are. But if you, and you were saying, and also people listening, if you're like, why aren't I making more money with my fiction? Have a look at who are the subgroups of customers you're serving, and how much money can they spend with you if they only like that series.
Yeah, that's fantastic again, yeah. So in terms of like practical steps, any like one listening out there is looking to sort of take more of a business shift with the writing, what practical steps do you think they could take like you say, to build these foundations?
Yeah, so I feel like one of the regular questions I get at events and stuff is people jump straight into wanting to do the marketing or building an email list. And then I say, so, well, at what stage is your book at? And they might just still be writing the first draft of their first book or editing their first book. And so that is the first practical thing, is you need a book.
Yeah.
And the second practical thing is you need more than one book. So I think a lot of this, especially as an indie author, you need books, multiple books, and books in a series, especially in fiction. You're not going to knock it out of the park with one book. And you'll see that with traditionally published authors too. Like George R. R. Martin is the classic one, right? He was, I don't know, in his 60s or something when Game of Thrones, the TV show. I know he was kind of famous within the fantasy niche, but he was just not a big name until then. And then it was like, oh, actually, he's got a ton of books. Yeah, people couldn't moan about the end of that series or whatever, but it,
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No, he had built up a career over decades before something really took off. So you don't make a business with one book. So I guess, yeah, focus on the books for sure. The other like practical thing is you do not need to set up a business. I think people get confused. Like you don't need to set up a company in order to make money with your book. So if you just want to write a novel and upload it on Amazon, you can just use your own name, and then if you do make money, you just account for it on your tax return. What I would suggest to people is you do at least set up a separate bank account, so then you can track income and you can hopefully track your expenses. Because if you do want to run a business, and a business is for the sake of making a profit, there are things you have to do in order to have an actual business around doing accounts and all of that kind of thing. But you set up a business with the intent of making a profit. And so you're actually tracking your income and expenses is really important. So, for example, again, we're speaking on Zoom. So you may have paid for a Zoom account. So that's some money that you could put under marketing and would be going out. Maybe you got cover design. Maybe you got editing. These are costs that are associated with an author business. And then when the money comes in, you can put that in there as well. And so if you do think, okay, I think I can do this, well, then prove it to yourself. Like, give it a year of putting money into this bank account or taking money out of this bank account and seeing how it goes. The reality is it can take a while. As we said, if you need to be writing multiple books, you need to be learning about business. You also need to be networking. I think this is really important. So one of the important things about deciding what kind of business you want is finding someone else who has a business like that. Now, I would say you can't emulate George R. R. Martin. You can't emulate, you know, Neil Gaiman, or you can't do that because they started at a different time. So the best thing is to kind of look at, okay, so who's doing something that I think I could do? So do you know Adam Beswick?
I've heard the name.
Yeah, so Adam is a fantasy writer. I think he's publishing at AJ Beswick, and he is a northern writer as well. And Northern England, I should say. people listening from other countries. He does TikTok to Shopify and TikTok Shop. That's his biggest business. He runs his own warehouse. And I look at Adam and I'm like, he's amazing. He's doing really well, but there's no way I want that business. No way. Right? I do not want a warehouse. I do not want to do TikTok. I don't want to do live sales. I don't want to do any of that. Yeah, exactly. Just not my type of thing, but works for him extremely well. And he's a fantasy author. So then you might look at someone else. You know, I guess I feel like I'm more introverted. I prefer audio. I do other things, you know, or maybe I prefer to do paid ads to Amazon or do a Kickstarter campaign or something like that. So find people who are running businesses in ways that you think you could do, and then examine their business in more detail. I think that's really important. So there's a couple of things, but I think just the overarching thing for all of this is to come back to, what do I want and why do I want this, and what am I willing to do to get this? So a lot of people forget to ask those questions. They just kind of jump in. So if you want to write a book because you want to say, I'm really proud of this story and I've written it and now it's out my head, then write it, publish it for sure, but don't bother with building an email list or trying to reach readers or paying for ads or doing any of that. Like, why would you bother? Just write and publish a book and hold it and give it to your family. And that works well for people. If you want a business, then why? And if you, and then also, what are you willing to do to get that? And what are you, how hard are you going to work? How smart are you going to work? All those different things. So why are you interested in this? Let's talk about you.
Me personally, I just absolutely love creating stories and sharing them and building connections with people who read the stories. And for me, if I was in a position to do that full time, that would be a dream situation. So, but I'm a bit like you. I don't really like all of the modern social media, short form video content. I'm more comfortable doing audio things and just creating written content as much as I can.
Well, just coming back to what you said about what you wanted, which was creating stories and connecting with people. Neither of those are business reasons to exist. You could do that without ever making any money. So why is a business as a creative interesting to you?
Well, I've always enjoyed business, but for me, it's the independence that comes with having a business. That's what I want.
And have you run your own business before?
I have, yeah. Actually, I've run two businesses. Not mine personally, but I was in charge of pretty much everything. And I enjoy seeing the growth, and I enjoy, obviously, as you grow, you can bring other people in, help them grow as well. And it's very satisfying.
Well, I think that's a really good point, because I feel like what we don't want to do is take the creativity out of business. I mean, look around, you know, if you're listening right now, you know, look around, everything around you has been created generally by a business, you know, the buildings and the technology, and business is creative.
Yeah.
And so that's really important. It's just a different kind of creativity than, say, making up stories. So I think the fact that you've, you know, run businesses before is really encouraging, because I feel like there's some very specific things. I mean, obviously, we mentioned products, customers, sales and distribution, marketing, financials, strategy. These are all important things that people need to learn about. And if you're kind of starting from scratch, it can feel a bit much. I do have a book called Your Author Business Plan, which kind of goes into the basics of all of that, which might help some people. But sort of the decision of what kind of business you want to run as well. So as I mentioned before, and as might also work for you, is your fiction may not be where the main income comes from. It may come from other things. So I have a Patreon, I have my podcast, which has corporate sponsors, I have webinars. So I have these other streams of income. And then importantly, I have nonfiction books, and I have multiple nonfiction books. So while I have sort of over 50 books and more of them are fiction, there is more income on my nonfiction side of my business.
Yeah, I get that as well. I've always generated more from the nonfiction side.
Yeah, so what you can do is just lean into that and say, okay, well, either I say I'm going to be the type of writer who just writes epic fantasy and I'm going to like just knuckle down, or you acknowledge that you're not that person and it doesn't seem like you are, in the same way that I'm not. Like, we have to honour who we are.
Yeah, exactly.
And what's the point of knuckling down and just writing the same book over and over again if you don't want to do that?
Yeah, I know. It becomes unenjoyable then, doesn't it?
Yes.
Because you're not.
And then it might as well be your job.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, we mentioned a few different things before about different kinds of revenue streams. Like, you mentioned that you've got some side printed copies of books and special editions. This has been like a really interesting development in the last probably 2 years, 3 years, would you say? All these special editions coming out, and there's real appetite for readers to want something a bit more. So in terms of revenue streams, what do you think of this? And are there any other ones that have developed or have been particularly successful for you?
Okay, so just on the special edition thing, which most people are doing either on Kickstarter and or Shopify or PayHip, or basically you're selling them yourself or at events or things like that, because you can't do these special editions on Amazon. So they're not, even though they can be print on demand, they are usually a print run or a sort of a special run. And then you're signing them, you're putting them in book boxes, or you're doing various things. So for one, the sort of the selling direct and the special editions, I think has come about mainly, well, two things. The reaction to just the huge amount of noise on Amazon Kindle. So it's extremely hard to be noticed on Kindle, especially in some of these subgenres, which are just packed full. And even though I'm pro AI as a tool, there is a lot of AI generated stuff now. So it's a market that's only getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So to be seen, having a special edition, sprayed edges, hardback with foiling and everything. Most traditionally published authors do not get that kind of treatment. So you can really stand out with the quality of your physical product as well as the quality of your story. Also, the average order value. So average order value is what we were saying before, like how much is a customer spending with you? And my average order value went up from $4 to $40 by selling
Nice.
direct. Yeah. The other thing with things like Kickstarter is you can sell webinars, you can sell consulting, you can sell events, you can so people are buying a book, but they might also pay more money to get the book plus something else. So it even though you may have fewer people buying, you can make more money. So it's part of the business model now. It's a kind of a couple of times a year for many of us, sort of spike revenue. A push campaign to do something that's beautiful, but also something that brings in a bigger chunk of money. So my next one is called Bones of the Deep. It is jfpenn.com/bones if people are interested. And
Nice.
I'm doing just some really cool things with this one. And so it's fun creatively, but it also makes more money, which is just brilliant, right? After years of just doing ebooks and basic print on demand. But of course, ebooks and basic print on demand with my backlist, the size of my backlist. And people have to remember, if it's over 50 books, then it's ebook, paperback, audiobook, hardbacks, workbooks for nonfiction, it's bundles, it's all the different platforms. And I won't name them all, but there are a lot of platforms now that you can get your books on, and audiobooks and YouTube and everything. So there's a lot of ways to get the books out there. But then the other things to think about are for, especially again, for nonfiction writers, teaching, speaking. Well, in fact, not even for nonfiction writers, lots of fiction writers will do that and charge for speaking and teaching, even if they don't have a nonfiction book. You can obviously still do that. I also do, I did do courses, sort of evergreen courses, but now I'm focusing more on webinars, which are more personal. And again, in an age of AI, anyone can find out anything. But what they don't get is the personal kind of live touch. And so that's why I'm doing webinars, is to make it much more personal. I do some consulting, but not very much. So mainly, I guess, what else? Affiliate income. I used to make a lot more on that. That's when you get a percentage commission on people buying other things. So, for example, Scrivener. I've been an affiliate of Scrivener for like a decade because
Nice.
I write in Scrivener, so I share that link and some people buy it and get some money from that. So yeah, it's more about thinking, oh, of course, I've got my Patreon. My podcast has corporate sponsors and Patreon. I now do a lot of sort of AI tutorials and that kind of thing. So everything works together. And that's another sort of tip for people, is you very much need a long-term view and a long-term plan. And then as you add new books and products and you do things like this, someone might find this interview in years to come. Then they're like, oh, okay. And they come over to my website, thecreativepen.com, and they find a whole load of stuff that all works together. So that's how you need to think, is sort of, okay, how does this work with this work with this over time? How does it become more like a snowball and just sort of work? Because that's the reality. The longer you do this, the easier it becomes.
A lot of it does come down to experience, doesn't it? And just you've got to be constantly looking for new answers, new opinions, new strategies, and just be a bit of a sponge when it comes to learning and soaking up as much as you can.
Yeah, I think the other thing to say, I don't do this anymore. Well, I do.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. And when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNCs apply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Very small amount of consulting. But one of the ways to, say, get out of a day job, as you're in, is to do services. So you can get paid far more quickly for services. So many authors will do cover design. They might do editing. They might do formatting. They'll do things that they can get paid quickly for, maybe freelance writing, ghostwriting, lots of different forms of things that sit within our ecosystem. And then while they build up their books and their network, and then eventually they ratchet down the freelance work and they ratchet up the book. So another romanticy author, Ruby Rowe, Sasha Black, who was on my podcast recently talking about her business, also does TikTok and has a warehouse. But she talks about how, like, 5 years ago when she left her day job, she did freelance, a lot of freelance work. So writing articles for people or helping build their websites, things like this. And then you say, okay, so 90% of my income is freelance year one, 80% year two. And then now she's 5 years in and makes 100% from book sales. So I think that's another way to think about it, is it's not that you'll make 100% of your income from books every single year. It may be, for example, when I left my job, I used to implement accounts payable systems. That's what I did.
Nice.
I know, it's crazy. I went to 4 days a week. So I said to my manager, can I go to 4 days a week? And then that fifth day, I was working on my author business. And I did that for, I don't know, a couple of years. And then I went full time as an author in 2011. But my income was split between all kinds of things. And I mean, it still is, but it's a lot more now. So I would say to you, someone like you, for example, you do SEO in your day job. If you can't stand that ever again, then fair enough. But one of the biggest things that's going on right now, as you probably know, is the AEO, the kind of answer engine optimization. A lot of authors now looking at their own websites going, I need to update all my SEO stuff for LLM search. So I'm looking, like, at the moment at the LLMS files that need to go on the website, and I'm looking at, how do I change things up? How do I do my Shopify for LLMs? How do I take advantage of that? So that niche right now is huge.
Yeah, it's very busy for sure. I know. That's what I do day in, day out in the day job. The LLMS.txt file, I think that's the one that you mentioned.
Yeah, exactly. So this,
don't worry about that. That's not a thing.
Yeah. Well, I just do what Gemini tells me. But the the point is that there are things that, if you wanted to run your own business rather than go in someone else's business, often we have to do the thing we did before, but on our own, and then build up the other stuff as well. So just one thought for people listening.
That's brilliant. I had a fantastic approach as well, just to transition gradually. It takes the pressure off. Like, if you just walk away from a full-time income, it's going to be very difficult to keep up with that for long.
Yeah, exactly. It took me 5 years in total, from 2006 when I started writing to 2011 when I went full-time, to sort of transition out. And then, yeah, it took me another 4 years to get back to six figures. So you do have to think about how does this business grow? But it's the same in any job, right? In any job, you come in day one, what do you know? You know nothing, and you're not valuable at all. And then by year five, you've got experience, you're more valuable. By year 10, you're you can do really well in a business. So that's how you've got to think about it as a career. Being a writer has so many facets to it.
What marketing approaches, obviously them all that you've tried, have stood the test of time for you? Do you think have been the most effective?
I know you've done a thing on email lists, and I hate to say it, but the email list is still really important. So yes, people should be building an email list, but not just for the sake of building an email list. What you've got to think is you are building a list of people who have opted in by choice to hear from you, but not just to hear from you, to actually buy from you. I feel like the email list thing has been too focused on how many people are on the list versus how many people actually buy. And that is often much, much smaller. So my podcast, for example, you know, get sort of 20,000 downloads a week, and but the number of people who say have joined my Patreon is a lot smaller, or the number of people who will buy my books is not that number, you know. So people consume your content in different ways, but not all of them are going to buy. And it's the same with your newsletter list. You have to, your email list, you have to think, okay, so that's why I don't do things like, I generally don't do you know, giveaways or some of the collaborations where you're just sort of getting freebie seekers, stuff like that. I'm pretty much have grown mine organically by just having a link at the back of the book for fiction. And so I have a smaller list, but, you know, I know they came through my own work. So that's one thing, is the email list. The second thing is you have to have some way for people to find you for free. So for fiction, often that's a free first in series or some free short stories or something where people can try your work. Or if you're in Kindle Unlimited, it's putting your books on 5 free days and promoting them, and just basically getting people to try your work somehow. And then for nonfiction, that can be content like podcasts or you know, people do YouTube videos, TikTok. I put in the same category, except TikTok marketing is specifically for selling, usually, not just for information. Like, this is information for people, hopefully useful, but we're not directly saying buy now every 5 minutes. And on TikTok, it's very effective for actually selling. So, email list, some kind of content, and then, of course, writing more books. Books in a series, whether it's fiction or nonfiction. I would actually, just coming back to your book. So you've written the Fantasy Writer's Handbook. What you could have done, or what you can still do, of course, is have the Epic Fantasy Writer's Handbook, or Epic Fantasy Tropes and Tips or something, you know, really kind of niche down into what are the different things that fantasy or world building for fantasy authors, and, you know, that kind of thing. So you can still have a series with nonfiction. And then, of course, with fiction, we all know what fiction series are, but having good series links, branding, all of that kind of thing. So, building an email list. Well, let's put writing more books at the top and series. Writing books in series, number one. Number two, build an email list. Number three, some kind of attraction marketing where you're putting stuff out in the world. And then paid advertising, I would say, is almost a must once you have proved that your book is worth advertising. So does it have good reviews? Are you getting sell through? Another mistake people make is spending money on advertising to things that are not worth advertising, to just to be brutally honest. So I think that's important. And then the other thing is also connecting with other authors, being part of the community, because opportunities come up there from relationships that you may never have got otherwise. So I've been in short story anthologies. I've had paid speaking stuff around the world, you know, been in promotions with other people because of relationships. So those are a few tips, I guess. Do you have any follow-ups on those?
No, fantastic tips as well. And the main on list is the most important one for me, and cultivating that relationship over time, and hopefully having people stick around for years. And that's
And
what you want, yeah.
some of them do, but what I would say is you also, the same as me, I would be separating my lists. So
Yeah, definitely.
somebody who wants to buy your YA epic fantasy may not, and in fact probably is not, the same person who wants to buy the Fantasy Writer's Handbook. That is a sort of the fiction non-fiction split. That's why I write under two names. So Joanna Penn is my non-fiction and JF Penn is my fiction and memoir name. And even then, the people who within JF Penn, there are people who've bought Pilgrimage, my memoir, and then people who bought The Map Walkers completely separately, and then people who might, Blood Vintage is a folk horror standalone, and then my Arcane series, that's already four different sub-niches.
Nice.
So,
Hungry readers.
yeah, and I think a mistake is trying to get a non-fiction readership to cross over with a fiction one. I find fiction readers particularly often, like we said at the beginning, in fantasy, people can be very particular about
Yeah, they
what
are.
they want.
Definitely. And I think, interestingly, AI is going to affect this quite a lot in terms of discoverability,
I hope it will
because,
do a lot better
yeah.
job,
I think you think you discussed this on one of your recent podcast episodes about, like, people are now going to be searching for things like, I want to read a book that's got this type of main character and it's also looked at this kind of trope, and you can get really specific. And
Well,
like you
even
say,
more
if
than
things
that.
are optimized, then you've got a greater chance of being found.
Yes, I mean, I now find all my books, fiction and non-fiction, really, through using ChatGPT and Claude. And the more they know about you, so the more they can recommend specific things. So I got recommended a couple of books recently. One was about the anatomical Venuses. I might have been talking about this on my show, which are these anatomical medical models that people, and I was like, oh my goodness, there's a novel about this. There's no way I would have found this otherwise. And the other one was a kind of art history slash supernatural slash horror thing with these evil paintings. And I love art history. I love all of this stuff. And again, would never have found that book. Neither of them were major bestsellers. Neither of them had were being particularly marketed, and yet the AIs found them for me because they know what I like to read. So I have high hopes for the future of discoverability. It might be very long tail though. You're not going to sell an absolute ton of books that way, but hopefully people will find us through that.
Yeah, and just speaking or well, sticking with AI, because that episode that you did on it at the start of the year when you were looking ahead at potential new trends, and you did spend a lot of time on AI, and I found it really refreshing, because I think with writing, and there's a lot of apprehension around AI, understandably so, but I'm someone who I use it every day in my day job, so I understand the capabilities that I can have. I've experimented a lot with using it to support writing, not using it, I would never use it for writing, but like the things around it, the things that we don't like to do, like the marketing side, that sometimes feels like a bit of a chore.
Oh,
I do
definitely a
feel like
chore.
it's a huge equalizer. It's gonna like free up so much time so that we can focus on actually producing the books and doing the enjoyable part. I
Yeah,
mean, what do
absolutely.
you think yourself?
Yeah, I use these tools every day. I mean, I do a lot of research as well. I love the deep research reports, and I use Gemini, ChatGPT, and Claude, all of them. I'll be running research reports on all three of them, and they're always quite different. So that's a big use case for me. I do a lot of research for my fiction and nonfiction. As you say about marketing, I've been using Claude Cowork to do my Amazon ads. So actually just sitting here watching it do my Amazon ads for me, which is just fantastic because it's something I really dislike doing. I think book sales descriptions, AI's been writing mine for years now.
I hate them, descriptions.
Yeah, exactly. Any kind of or research like this, you know, I obviously had a look at your website and your books, but then I asked Claude to tell me about you, to go look into all of your stuff that's online about you, the interviews you've done, and bring back some information for me. So I knew more about you, preparing for you know, pitches, for example, so somebody could pitch you to be on this podcast by using the AI tool to research you and then to find the overlap with your interests and the
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Interests of their book and pitch you with a far more appropriate pitch than most of the stuff we get. I'm sure you get the same. I get just so inappropriate pitches every day. I mean, it's crazy. And then, like we talked about, like with how do you do stuff? I feel like if you want to run an author business, then ask one of these models, ask whichever one your favorite is, you know, ask Claude or ChatGPT or whatever, and say, look, I have this one book, or I want to write this one book and I want to run an author business. Ask me some questions about me and my books and tell me how I can build an author business. You're going to get personalized help.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so useful. It really is. So yeah, completely agree. You don't have to use it for anything creative if you don't want to, but please be using these tools for helping you with marketing, for helping you with all the business side that goes around it. And also, I have no issues with people using it creatively as well. All my book covers for the last 2 years, I have done the artwork for, and then worked with my book cover designer to actually turn that into books. Yeah. I do my book trailers with AI. You know, I love it. I just have such a great time.
And have you noticed any sort of backlash against you using it? I mean, because I think one of the main reasons why I think there's this sort of hesitancy is every now and then you see a surgeon, like someone's used it in a cover, the book's being pulled, the author's had to make a big statement apologizing to people, and it's like you see it all, and I always feel like it's a bit overblown. But I mean, have you experienced anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, there's always this stuff, but I started self-publishing in a time where we were considered the worst of the worst, and people used to basically call us all kinds of things, and we were shut out of everything. And then ebooks, people treated ebooks and, you know, subscription models, and people are just resistant to change. I see this as, given how old I am, a bit older than you, you know, having seen how the internet changed business over the last 25 years, and thinking that, to me, this is just the way the internet went. This is the next, we're in sort of year three of the next 25 years of a shift in the way we do business, the way we create, the way we do all this stuff. I mean, I don't see people getting annoyed about filters on Instagram in the way that they get annoyed about AI book covers, for example, or, you know, I think it's just a technological shift. There's always difficulties. But personally, I'm having so much fun. It's so useful. It's so creative. I feel so much happier when I'm co-creating with AI. I'm saving money. I'm saving time. I'm having a good life. And also, I think people can still be upset about it. But the reality is that there are barely any stock photo sites, for example, left that don't have AI images on. So yeah. Even those people who say, oh, I'll never use AI, they're using Amazon, they're using Google, they're using Spotify, you know, they're using Netflix, all of which are using various levels of this AI. So I feel like we're just in a difficult time, and the decision to make for you personally and you listening is, where are your lines? And, you know, just be ethical about it and carry on.
Yeah, fantastic advice. There's been a few cool features that I've tried off the back of the things that you've said. One of them was the audiobooks using your own voice.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
It is very cool. And again, yeah, I have a voice clone for my, and people want to have a look. It's on YouTube for free. So Death Valley by JF Penn on YouTube is, and actually on Spotify, depending on where people are listening to this, but is my voice clone. And I love it. I absolutely love it. It's and I still narrate as human me, my short stories and my non-fiction, but to do a whole novel is a hell of a thing. And so yeah, I'm really happy with the voice clone. And that kind of stuff is being rolled out now. ACX, so Audible, are doing it with some creators. It is coming. So yeah, as a voice artist, you've got a I guess what a lot of listeners think is a very interesting accent. So yeah, I feel like that's very cool.
Yeah, when you can understand me anyway. Well,
Yes, but the good thing with the AI is you could adjust it so that if there are bits that are more difficult, you can figure that out.
that 11 Labs tool, I think that's the one that you mentioned.
I use 11 Labs,
Yeah, so it's amazing what you can do. So you if anyone's interested in trying it, you just need to upload. I think they recommend like at least 1 hour, but 2 hours is the best. Just you talking, and then it will learn and then start generating the voice for any text that you input. But you can actually change the accent. So when I uploaded it,
Yeah,
I
you
didn't
can. Or
realize it selected
you
that
could
as
turn
prison.
your voice.
Yeah,
Yeah,
exactly.
you
Yeah,
could turn your voice into a woman, or you can change elements of it. And again, if people find that uncomfortable, well, it's going to help accessibility. It's also going to help for translation and translation audio, because we're so lucky in English language. We have huge numbers of audiobooks. We always have. But most countries in the world have barely any audiobook content. So what this is enabling is just this massive growth in audiobook content, which I think is just, yeah, it's a whole nother part of the business, really, is audiobooks.
yeah, and these tools make it possible.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I
Unless
think,
you've got 10 grand to spare, to especially with
yeah,
epic fantasy.
I know, but I think what we can do now as well is we can produce things of a lot higher quality. So just as an example, before we started talking, I was doing some work on a giveaway for Patreon, and I wanted to make like a little montage image of like a few different things. Now I could sit there for a good couple of hours on Canva or Photoshop and make it look just a bit rubbish. But you could just give the AI the images, say what text you want, and within 5 minutes it was done.
Yeah, did you use Nano Banana or?
Yeah, I used to use a mix. Nano Banana's fantastic. Midjourney is also very good.
Yeah, I love Midjourney. All my book covers are Midjourney.
Yeah, it's great. And sometimes like you can use like one of them to give you like the sort of core concept and then get another
And
one
write
to
the prompt.
refine it.
I just get them to write the prompt now. And I know some people will feel uncomfortable about this, but I upload my books. I want to be discovered in these AI models, so I upload my books all the time to all the models. But to get book covers and to get sales descriptions and stuff, if you do upload your book, obviously read the terms and conditions. But if you upload your book, it has all the context. So then you can say, and what I did for my jfpenn.com/bones, on that page, you'll see, well, one, the book cover, but also some character images of the woman who's on the boat, and the boat, it's set on a tall ship sailing the South Pacific. And so those images, the book trailers, everything, all from uploading the book, getting the prompts, and then pasting the prompts from AI into Midjourney. So it's just this collaborative, fun, creative process, right?
Yeah, and I think what we're doing is we're creating an experience that hopefully readers are going to find more immersive and a bit richer.
And I don't know if you saw the Gemini's Genie model. I mean, we're in the UK. They've just released it in the US to pro subscribers, but you can now upload or generate one image, and then you can go into it. It's a world building model, so you can basically walk into your world. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be so good
That's
for
insane.
fiction authors, right?
Yeah, imagine doing that with a map, and then you could put like a
Exactly.
little link in an ebook, and then you could start exploring the world. That'd be
That's
insane.
exactly the point, and that's actually what my map walker's fantasy is. It's like, what would happen if you can walk through maps? What world are you going to end up in? So yeah, I'm just super excited about this.
Yeah. I think a lot of writers should be the same. I don't think there should be an apprehension. I'd like a lot of people are saying it's not going to be going anywhere, and if we can use it in ways that we feel comfortable and that is going to help not only our writing business, and but also the reading experience. I think it's a bit of a no-brainer because the like you said in your podcast, the publishers are all using it.
Yeah, exactly.
So if
If
we don't
people
use it, we're almost going to be doubly left behind.
left behind, exactly. Yeah, if people are interested, that's the 2026 trends episode on the Creative Pen podcast, Pen with a double N.
Yeah, it's a great episode, well worth a listen. I'll put a link in the description as well.
Thank you.
So I think quite a helpful practical question for you here, just to sort of bring things to a close. So obviously a lot of writers who are starting out, they're going to be working full time, and we want to try and get into that space where we're transitioning into a full-time business. But say if we only have like say 4 or 5 hours a week to put into it, what do you think should be the primary focus to start making them dreams come true?
I think if you only have 4 or 5 hours a week, you have to just focus on the writing. If that 5 hours a week is creative time, and then I would also, let's just say it's 5 hours of creative time, I would say spend that writing, but also trying to understand your audience. And then I would say use your downtime. So that 5 hours might be work. So I used to get up before my day job. So I get up at five, write, and then go to my job. But then in the evening, you might be watching TV or scrolling or whatever, or reading. That downtime, you could start substituting things that will actually help your career. So, I mentioned Game of Thrones before. I love that series. And if you wanted to write epic fantasy, you could be sitting there with a notebook, like partly downtiming watching TV, but also writing down, okay, so what are the tropes here? What do I like about it? What is annoying? What has been done over and over, that kind of thing. So just split your time into creative time when you can actually get stuff out of your head, which is that writing time. And then in your downtime, maybe people are listening to this, I don't know, on the at the gym or something, or out for walking the dog or doing the dishes. Listening to podcasts can really help you learn a lot of the things you need to learn. And then once you at least have a draft of the book, then of course you might need to start doing some other things. But yeah, 5 hours a week, I would be focusing on getting book one, book two, book three sorted out.
Yeah, that's great advice, and I definitely agree. I think it's so easy to get drawn away, isn't it, from the
Because it's
creative
easier.
side.
It is easier to scroll on TikTok or Instagram or whatever than it is to sit down and write 1,000 words of your epic fantasy. It is just literally easier. So I think, just to be a bit hardcore about it, stop distracting yourself with all these other things and actually work on your book. It is work, fun work and great work, but it is still work, which is why people just seem to avoid it.
And
Do anything else.
it doesn't do itself, that's
No, it
the
doesn't. Or
main thing.
and you could say, oh, you could use AI to write it, but I don't see the point in that. To me, writing a book is meant to be transformational for you. It's not about, I mean, yes, sure, we've talked about business here, but at the end of the day, I write my books because I want, like you, to learn things and change myself and change other people and connect and serve my audience and all those things. So if I generate a book with AI, I just don't see the point. It doesn't enhance my life.
No,
So yeah, have fun with AI, but yeah, make sure you're writing your book first.
Joanna, thank you very much. It's been an absolutely wonderful chatting with you. I've learned so much, and I'm sure there's lots more to learn on your website and on your own podcast, The Creative Pen. And if anyone wanted to carry on that learning adventure, where's the best place for them to go?
Yeah, we'll come on over to the Creative Pen podcast, Pen with a double N. And my books is Joanna Pen. There's several books on business there. But yeah, that's where you can find me. And my fiction, jfpen.com.
Awesome. I'll put links in the description as well. Well, thank you very much again. It's been an absolute pleasure.
And thanks for having me.
And thank you everybody at home for listening. We'll be back soon with a brand new episode.
Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Writers Tool Shed.
If you'd like to join our writing community on Discord and get access to fantasy writing classes and books on Patreon, check the links in the description. And if you don't want to miss any future episodes, be sure to follow or subscribe. And to support the show, leave a quick rating on Spotify or iTunes and share this episode on social media or with anyone who you think may be interested. Thank you very much for listening.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Greenlight helps kids learn about money the way most of us never did, by actually using it. It's a debit card and money app that teaches kids to earn, save, and spend in real life, not just swipe and hope for the best. Learning happens naturally in the moment. Parents can set limits, see spending in real time, and guide better habits along the way, all in one place, without constant check-ins or cash runs. Don't wait. Try Greenlight risk-free today at greenlight.com/trygreenlight.